Okay, let's turn to Matthew chapter 13 and get this party started. In our previous study, we looked at the parable of the mustard seed, as you recall, in verses 31 through 32. The kingdom there is depicted parabolically as having remarkable growth akin to a mustard seed growing into a large plant, a garden plant or whatever. And it's the ironic aspect of it starting out at it's a small seed and then ending up in such a large plant. It's the irony of the parable. That's the thing, that the twist of it. I conjectured last week that I thought that parable, the parable of the mustard seed, was to offset the previous two parables depicting the lack of reception that the seed received in the soil and the difficulty of the expansion of the kingdom of heaven. How difficult. I thought that this was likely, that parable was likely to give a better outlook for the disciples. And I do believe that. I also believe that of the parable that we're going to be looking at tonight. So in Matthew chapter 13, verse 33, he told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in three measures of flour till it was all leavened. End of parable. The first thing you notice about this parable is it's brief. It's terribly brief. There's no explanation as there were in previous parables. But if you look at the parable prior, the parable of the of the grain of mustard seed, then they appear to be describing something that expands. And in this case, the kingdom of heaven. He makes that clear, that that's the analogy. And it may well be that these two parables are intended to go together. That's possible. Certainly when you study analysis of this text in exegetical commentaries, in analytical works, you see that they are treated together. So it's likely that most academics consider them to have been intended to be together, told at once, as if Jesus just rattled these two parables together. In any case, there seems to be enough difference, and there seems to be enough that we need to consider that we're looking at it separately. So here's the way I want to do this. I want to look at this, first of all, the meaning of leaven. The meaning of leaven. And then, the meaning of the parable. And then thirdly, the application of the parable. So let's do it that way. The first thing we're going to do is do background information on leaven. What was leaven? Most of us don't use that word. We're not familiar with it. Holman's Bible Dictionary says it is a small portion of fermented dough used to ferment other dough. In Hendrickson's commentary on the book of Matthew, in this parable, he makes this explanation. Once inserted into a batch, it continues its process of fermentation until the whole batch has risen. Now, I'm not a cook. I'm not a baker. But I think most of us would call this yeast. But there are more than one symbolic use, or there is more than one symbolic use of leaven in the Bible. In the New Testament, leaven is often used symbolically of a corrupting influence. A corrupting influence. When Jesus warned about the leaven of the Pharisees, he did so referencing their teaching and their hypocrisy. That, well, let's just look over in chapter 16, verse 5. When the disciples reached the other side, they had forgotten to bring any bread. Jesus said to them, "Watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." And they began discussing it among themselves, saying, "We brought no bread." But Jesus, aware of this, said, "O you of little faith, why are you discussing among yourselves the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive? Do you not remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000? And how many baskets you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000? How many baskets you gathered? How is it that you fail to understand that I did not speak about bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." Then they understood that he did not tell them to be aware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Now, in that case, and in other cases, like in Luke chapter 12, Jesus is talking about a permeating and a penetrating influence in a negative sense, a rather destructive, encroaching theological issue. Paul wrote about the danger of leaven in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 when he was admonishing the church at Corinth to withdraw fellowship, or we might say today, excommunicate the member that was in their fellowship that was practicing sin. And it was known that it was happening in 1 Corinthians 5, 1 through 13. He says, a little leaven. Leaven's the whole loaf or the whole lump, speaking of dough. And there he was talking about, if you endure this sin, leaven, don't be surprised when it permeates, when it expands, when it grows, when it affects the rest of the loaf or lump. And in this case, the analogy would have been the fellowship of believers in Corinth. So those reasons cause some to believe that just universally the New Testament, when it refers to leaven, does so in a negative connotation, that leaven means something evil. But there are several reasons that I don't think that's true. This parable is one of those reasons. There is no reason that an item cannot be used neutrally. Obviously, there is an immediate mental image when we use the word yeast or leaven. We, bakers, that is, people who do that sort of thing. And if you were in the first century, you did that every day. You baked bread every day. You experienced what happens. And I don't know a lot about this stuff, folks. I really, really don't. And I don't intend to study it. I'll eat it, but I don't intend to study it. But I know that my wife knows how to keep yeast from rising until she's ready for it to. So, where we have packets of yeast, they did not. They had fermented dough that they kept separate for the purpose of infiltrating other dough and causing it to rise. And therefore, the penetrating aspect of leaven is acknowledged. But that penetration is neutral. It all depends on the intent and whether we are encouraged by it or warned by it. In fact, the speaker or the writer who uses this analogy or this parable, this metaphor of leaven, determines by usage whether or not leaven in that case is positive or negative. And when we do this, when we take what, well, I know what Jesus says over there in the 15th chapter of Matthew, or in the 5th chapter of 1 Corinthians, what Paul says, I know there that it's negative. If we make the assumption then that everywhere it's used, it's negative, then we are bringing a presupposition into the text. And that presupposition, while we may have a foundation for it, if the text itself that we're reading and trying to understand doesn't yield that meaning, then what we're doing is called eisegesis. That is, we're bringing meaning into the text rather than exegesis, which is bringing meaning out of the text. Now, I hear a lot of preaching that fires people up. That is eisegesis. In other words, they are taking a preconceived idea and laying it into the text. The text itself doesn't say that. So let's be careful about that. The last phrase, or the last thing that we've read, this parable that we've just been introduced to, if we exegete it and left out all other texts, would we have any reason whatsoever to conclude that leaven is evil? In fact, we wouldn't. We would be referred to the immediate context, which is the parable we just dealt with last week, the mustard grain, the mustard seed. And what happens with the mustard seed? It starts out tiny, it gets big. And it represents, he said, the kingdom of heaven. It's like that. He says this about leaven as well. The kingdom of heaven is like. So if we use the immediate context to be our guide and we let the text give us the influence, then I think we're going to conclude that leaven is used both ways in the New Testament, positively and negatively as well. So if Jesus doesn't mean to use leaven in the context as a corrupting influence, then what does he mean? That brings us to point number two in our outline, the meaning of the parable. And I think the meaning of the parable is plain, but I think it doesn't necessarily become plain until we really look at it. First of all, the parable seems to be teaching that the kingdom of heaven will be expanding, that it will be expanding. It's like leaven. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven. In what way is it like leaven? Well, we don't know a lot about leaven, but the most characteristic attribute of leaven is that it expands. It penetrates. Another way of saying it is it permeates. The kingdom of heaven will permeate. This loaf or this lump, in this case, seems to be representing the world. I can't say that emphatically. We can only see what's there. But if the kingdom of heaven is like the leaven, then the loaf has to be like something. It has to be compared to something. Into what is the kingdom of heaven being placed? Well, Jesus talked about it. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, he said, as he began to preach. In other words, he was saying the kingdom of heaven is here. It's right here. And so if we take that analogy, the kingdom of heaven is leaven, then the lump has to be where the leaven is placed, or where the kingdom of heaven is being placed. In this case, the kingdom of heaven is clearly being moved from heaven to earth. It's here on earth. So if the leaven represents the kingdom of heaven and the lump represents the earth, then what he's saying is the kingdom of heaven is going to expand, penetrate the whole earth, just like leaven would the whole lump. Now how? In what way? The parable doesn't say. The parable doesn't say. The parable simply is a story of a woman who takes the leaven, that little clump of dough, puts it in a larger lump of dough for the purpose of baking. She's going to make something. What is she doing? She's changing her dough. She's changing it. She's changing it from a flat piece of flour. I don't even know how you make dough. Somebody tell me. You do use flour, don't you? Anything else? Water? Huh? Are you a baker? Okay, salt. That makes you qualified. But there's not much else. I mean, I've eaten flour that wasn't cooked. It didn't quite make its way into whatever I was trying to cook, just plain old flour. In fact, I made biscuits last week. And I don't even want to tell you about it. It was a mess. I don't know why. I'm buying them from now on. That's ridiculous. I'm just telling you, I made these things. And I don't remember ever doing this before, but I felt like doing it. And I did it. And I've got to be honest with you. I was a little timid about eating them. Because when I was done with them, I couldn't get the stuff off my hands. But I'm here to tell you, folks, what started out really not being very attractive and quite frankly a little frightening, because even after I had done whatever what the recipe said to do, it told me, after I'd done everything, to put more flour on it. I understood that later because I wouldn't have gotten it off the pan if I hadn't done that. But after I baked it, listen, after I baked it, I put it in the oven, stuck it in there, watched that stuff rise, watched it turn brown or golden brown or whatever you want. It looked like it was ready to eat. On some of them, the flour never changed. It looked like flour. I didn't serve those. Those got left aside. I ate those later. Just buttered them on the top. That fixed it. But the point is, just flour and water and salt just doesn't do a whole lot. I would never serve that, but something transforms, something changes when you mix that all together and then it begins to rise. It becomes an edible thing. I'd hate to eat it before it did that. Can you imagine eating it before it did that? You get it inside of you and then it does that? Maybe that's what happened to some of us. So I think he's saying here, and now analytically or comparatively, that the kingdom of heaven is going to permeate, spread out within the world. I think that the reason for that is to encourage these disciples. He's just told them, remember, parables about soils that were not going to be receptive to seed, or that were not going to be productive with seed, or that were going to be productive and were going to be receptive, but were not going to yield any fruit. So, but there's a second aspect, because he's a little more specific in this parable. Verse 33, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven. We've looked at that. But that's not all he says. He mentions that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour. We call that folding it in, I guess. Look at me. Been watching so many Bobby Flay. I'd like to stone that man. He's on my TV every night. Does anybody know who I'm talking about? There's a San Antonio guy that's going to be on I beat Bobby Flay show, whatever it's called. All right, but look at the last phrase. It's after the last comma. Till it was all leavened. Now, anybody who knows anything about yeast knows once it starts it, it's going to continue. But you can interrupt it. Did you know that? How do you interrupt it? Huh? You can knead it. You can turn it some more. Oh, if a little bit of mixing it was good, let's mix it up really good now. And what happens? You kill the leavening effect. It becomes concrete. Now, I've eaten biscuits that tasted like concrete. I've made them. So that can happen. There can be an interference. You can abort the penetration. You can stop it right in its tracks. Is there any other way you can do it? Say that again. Cold. In fact, that's how my mama and my wife both, they're not ready to bake them. They wanted to prepare the rolls. They're not ready to bake them. Thanksgiving's 2 days away. They stick them in the refrigerator. And they just sit there. Okay. So the point I'm making is, if you were a hearer in the first century of this parable, and you have all this knowledge by daily experience with making bread and leaven, using leaven, then all kinds of images come into your mind. Maybe like, I made bread today and it fell. You know, it just fell. It was a floppy mess. That was the kind of bread I had today. And anybody who bakes knows you don't bat 1,000. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But Jesus was clear about this kingdom of heaven, at least as it related to leaven. It was all leavened. So what he's saying here is twofold. Number one, the kingdom of heaven is going to have the same penetrative effect that yeast or leaven has in dough. The second thing is, it is going to be complete. It is going to be a thorough and complete influence or penetration. I want to take you through a few passages of Scripture, if I may. If you don't have time to turn, just write these down and look at them later for your own amusement or encouragement. In Romans chapter 10, which is a chapter uniquely about the election and plan, eternal plan of God, it says in Romans chapter 10, verse 17, so faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. But I ask, have they not heard? Indeed they have. Watch this. For their voice has gone out to all the earth, and their words to the ends of the world. Romans chapter 16. In the doxology of Romans 16, verse 25, now to him who is able to strengthen you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery that was kept secret for long ages, but has now been disclosed and through the prophetic writings has been made known to, where? All nations, according to the command of the eternal God. How? By the command of the eternal God, to bring about the obedience of faith, to the only wise God be glory forevermore through Jesus Christ. Amen. One more. Can we do one more? Colossians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, chapter 1, verse 6. Paul writes about the gospel which has come to you, as indeed in the whole world it is bearing fruit and growing, as it also does among you since the day you heard it and understood the grace of God in truth. Look, jump down to verse 23. If indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister. The kingdom's influence will be complete. They began to see that that penetration was complete. Even in their day, it was moving on. Could they see it in that moment? No. Were they going to doubt that in the days to come? Oh, yes. They were going to have good reason to doubt it. Because not only would the hand of man, but the very arm of the enemy himself, the evil one, Satan, would do all he could do to pluck up the seed, to pour cold water on, to put in the refrigerator the warmth and the penetrating influence of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, how in the world would we apply a parable like this? Very simply, put yourself in the shoes or the sandals of the disciples. Hear what they heard. And I would say, when you see the gospel being rejected, and you will, if you present it, you will see it being rejected. Don't forget, even Jesus did. So you're not going to bat a thousand if he didn't bat a thousand. And he didn't. Don't lose heart. Don't lose heart. The kingdom of God does not come with observation. So says Luke 17. Have you ever sat there waiting for water to boil? How does it not happen until you finally go sit down in the living room and finally get comfortable in your recliner? Hasn't boiled. I've been watching it for 3 minutes, for 5 minutes, standing there. Hadn't been boiled. But as soon as I leave the room, boom, it starts boiling. Now I've got to get up and go back in there again. A watched pot never boils. That's the old adage. Of course it would. It's just hard to stand there and watch it until it does. Today, while Ruth was recovering from her episode, I think I told you last week about that doctor's office, or maybe a couple of weeks ago. She's a hematologist, and one of the things she does is she treats diseases of the blood. And two of the most common diseases of the blood are leukemia and lymphoma. And so in her office, or in her clinic, there's a room where we were sent today, or where we were put today, where everyone is receiving chemotherapy. There was a sweet lady receiving chemotherapy right adjacent to Ruth. I say sweet, I don't know her, but I do know this. She had enough on her mind that any interest in somebody else's welfare and well-being was above and beyond the call of duty. But this sweet lady from Laredo, I think they pronounced it Laredo, had driven whatever it is, 3 hours for this treatment. She asked about Ruth, and Ruth said, I think I'm fine. And then she looked up at her bag, her IV bag where that medicine was draining out, and she said, it doesn't look like it's ever going to empty. She said, it doesn't look like it's moved at all. And she fell asleep. While she was asleep, and I had nothing else to do, I watched. And honestly, for 10 minutes, one drop. So Ruth and I got a conversation going, and the woman's husband had fallen asleep too. And distracted from our conversation, I looked back at her chemo bag. And now, It was just pouring out. They were both asleep. And it was just pouring out, which is exactly the way it's supposed to happen. Very much like the kingdom of heaven, people. We won't always observe the kingdom of heaven expanding, but make no mistake, it is and it will. You may not see the effect of your witness, of your preaching the gospel to loved ones, friends, co-workers, but it is having an effect. That effect is guaranteed. It will penetrate the world. It will change this world. The gospel has changed this world. Imagine if there was no gospel. Imagine if there were no church in this world. Just take our country. We talk about this being a godless country. But make no mistake, it's not. And the reason it is not is because of the church. We're here. If I read the New Testament correctly, and I'm not saying I always do, but in this case, I've come to this conclusion. There's coming a day when the church will not be in this world. There's coming a day when the penetrating effect of the gospel is going to stop, because it's gone as far as it's going to go. It's gone as far as God is going to let it go. And He's going to take us out. And literally, and I'm not saying this simply or coldly, but all hell will break loose on this earth. But until then, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, the Jew first and also the Greek. Be encouraged. So next week we're going to take up the next parable, but understand that to apply this parable, then we need to be, in a sense, the leaven in this world. We are the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is not just the gospel. The gospel is the seed. In this respect, the kingdom of heaven is you. We're where Christ is reigning right now. We're where He's reigning. So we need to do our part. In the same way that the leaven does its part. You cannot leaven it, I said this Sunday, if you're not in it. I'm all about guarding our children and being careful with what that is put in their heads. But be careful, moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, that you don't so isolate your child that is a child of faith from the children who lack faith that your kids are no earthly good. And don't you be so isolated for fear that you'll be contaminated by the sinfulness of this world, that you are so heavenly minded that you're of no earthly good. Be leaven. Change this world. And the only way to change it is to be hidden in it. Let's pray.